Hello and welcome to another post-game edition of the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat reporter for the Sun Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder, Penn State football beat reporter for The Athletic. And we just watched a game that was just underwhelming in every sense of the word.
John, Penn State got the win, 27-6 against Rutgers. Holy God, it was 10-6 at the half. Penn State had a lead. Drew Aller exited early in the third quarter. This was, I want to say, a rock fight, but Rutgers really didn't have many rocks to throw.
That's offensive to rock fights, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we get too deep into it, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're on YouTube, click that thumbs up button down below. So hit the subscribe button, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review, leave a 5-star rating. We always appreciate that. And for your troubles, I do have some photos of the scary stairs. I don't know if you took any, Audrey, but
I actually, there's a good chance, John, that we would not have been recording tonight because I could have lost a limb during the final minutes of regulation. I sprinted to the elevator and I heard the door shutting and threw my arm in it, hoping it would stop because otherwise I knew I'd have to take the stairs. And thankfully it stopped. I have both arms here intact to show for it. So I didn't get any pictures, but
I took some from below.
Stater Ryan Parsons sent us a good photo, which I thought perfectly encapsulated the rust spots on the steps. So he tweeted
the fear
that out.
They're going to topple.
It's really, John, has saved me and you from having to go toward the steps to take the photo.
Well, see, I took some from below, so I got the view, like, looking up, like, you can see the height, and it honestly gave me anxiety to even take those photos, and I hated every second of it. I am just now seeing the photos that Ryan took, and I'm getting anxiety looking at that, and I'm going to switch tabs back to looking at the Perfect. Podcast, because I hated every second. But I do have those. I will tweet those out either tonight. We're obviously recording Saturday night, or sometime Sunday morning. I'll make sure everyone gets to see at least the upward view of the whole thing that I did not have to go down. But you mentioned rock fight. Like, this is just an underwhelming game altogether, right? Like, it was, the offense wasn't any different, right? Like, the starting quarterback gets hurt. Like, it's you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where, how do you feel good about this as a Penn State fan?
Here's the thing, right? And I wrote about this in my story on The Athletic afterward. If anyone expected that the offense was going to be drastically different or drastically improved in a week, you shouldn't have come into this game with that line of thinking, because that was never going to be the case, right? This is an off-season project, off-season overhaul for the next OC, because it's an issue. I mean, this was just that first half was absolutely ugly when you look at it. the box score, I mean, Penn State's receiving corps today, John, if we don't pull it up, we don't look at it. Who is the leading receiver today?
Who is the leading wide receiver today? Okay, I do know this. Amari Evans had one catch for 25 yards because he flexed afterward.
because we were talking about it in the press box. Someone. He was tied.
Oh, he was tied with someone else had 25 yards?
No, with one catch.
Oh, yeah, there were several guys that had one catch.
Not many of them, John. Liam Clifford had one catch for 15 yards, Catron Allen had one catch for 6 yards.
Yeah. The two leading pass catchers were Tyler Warren and Theo Johnson, who had two catches each. It's not good.
Yeah, 7 total receptions today. Again, like, that is where this offense is. Keandre Lambert-Smith now, you take the Michigan game, you add this game into it. It combined whopping one catch for 6 yards. That is your number one receiver. This offense is bad. I mean, it's a tough watch. Now, I will say, granted, this was a rough week for the offense in terms of all the logistics that were at play after firing Mike Yurcich. Ty Howell was up in the box as we expected. Jaywan Sider on the sidelines. We do not know who called plays. James Franklin didn't say during the week.
Do I dare speculate on this? Because I
go
was
ahead.
Watching...
We haven't talked about this, but I might be able to... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was watching through my binoculars, and I was trying to see Jaywan Sider, because obviously we can't see Ty Howell. He's in the same building that we're in, I think.
You didn't stick your head out the window and
that's correct.
Try to look down on a level?
There was a cable hanging in front of Bob Flounders of Penn Live that dangled in front of him. We thought maybe they were doing the two tin cups and a string to communicate between Howell and Sider down on the sideline. Yeah. But I did not see Sider speaking when I thought calls were coming in. always, right? Yeah. Like I thought, I don't know if that was the case in the red zone. Like I didn't really check it in specific situations, but every time I looked, he was not talking on the headset when a call would be coming in. I don't want to draw any conclusions from that. I don't want to make, but like that is an observation that I had that I don't know that everyone else would be able to see. Like obviously if you're watching on TV, you can't see that. Right. Yeah. So I did not see him speaking when, at the time that I thought a play call would be coming in. Do you have any perspective on that? Like, were you looking for that as well?
Yes, I was looking for that. I'm with you and that it didn't seem like Jaywan was doing as much talking. But again, maybe I was looking at all the wrong spots.
Yeah.
But James Franklin had two sheets in front of him today. Instead of one, there were two. So I did take note of that. I zoomed in with my binoculars and my camera. Two sheets. I think it's safe to say he was more involved today, John. I think that's probably a fair assumption. Maybe, who knows at this point.
I mean, he was more involved throughout the week. Like he said.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the quarterback meeting rooms throughout the week.
Frankly, he should be more involved. Like that is,
yeah.
We talk about his responsibility as a head coach. Whether he was or he wasn't, he should have been more involved today to help Howell out, to help Sider out, to help the whole offensive staff out. Because
Danny
O'Brien is most familiar
in a
with,
big spot. Yeah.
Like part of his responsibility, and I think if this is the case, then he probably handled it well, is to be as involved as possible. Frankly, had he gone into it and said that he was going to call plays, I don't think it would have been that much of an issue, right? Like he was in a unique position because he has said before how much he works with the offense, where he is in those meetings, he has experience doing those things, like, and so it would have made it a little bit easier. I don't fault him for handling it the way he did, but I do think like there is credence to like just letting him call plays today. I don't think that was the case though. And I do think like his involvement probably helped the situation and streamlined a process that could have been really messy. I think all things considered, they handled this really well.
Yeah.
Like the change that had to be made was like the changes they had to make, like it could have been a disaster from a communication standpoint. Didn't feel like they had any issues with like false starts on snap counts being wrong. You know what I mean? Plays
delay
not getting
games,
in, causing delay
of
game. Yeah. It didn't feel like there were any of those. No logistical issues that I thought could have been a problem. And that's a credit to James Franklin. It's credit to the coaching staff. It's credit to the players. It's credit to everyone involved in this.
James Franklin did say after the game, something along the lines of like, there are positives if people are willing to talk about them. I think we just found one of them, John. You know, and I will say too, so Drew Aller gets hurt early in the third quarter. I'll start by saying I asked James Franklin about it after the game. I don't think he particularly enjoyed my question.
I think I just like, do you want me to think, because this, I find this as the observer of this situation, this cracks me up every time because it happens all the time, right? We saw a situation earlier this year, and I'll get back to today in a second. We saw a situation earlier this year when James was asked about JB Nelson and his status and said he doesn't talk about injuries unless they're season ending. And it was very curt about it, was like short with the reporter. And then I asked like two questions later, how has Trey Wallace handled not playing? This was back in like, I want to say like early October, late September, when Wallace wasn't playing because he was hurt. And James said something along the, it was after Northwestern. I think it was maybe the UMass or the bye week. He said like, oh, we would have had Trey back for Northwestern, but he got stepped on, clearly pointing to a lower leg injury, I assume. But like because of that, they held him out precautionary. So he like right after saying he doesn't talk about injuries, he tells us specifically, essentially the body part that a guy got hurt and the timeline for when he's going to come back, which brings us to today where Mark Brennan asked the initial question. James just kind of avoided it because it's part of a two-part question. And when like he will do that, where he will pick and choose the part
he
wants to
answer. Play calling part of the question and not
which
the
is fine.
Quarterback part.
And so you circled back, as you should, by the way, as any good reporter would, and credit to you for doing that.
I fell on the sword today for the beat.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Once I saw you were getting the mic, I was like, I don't need to do this now. Like, I don't need to get the mic. Audrey's going to ask this. But you asked about the timeline. And again, James says that he doesn't talk about injuries. And then immediately after it says he doesn't think it's serious, but they don't know for sure. So like he's saying he's not going to answer it. And then he answers it.
And then I
never understand it. This is why we continue to ask, by the way, for people who are curious as to why we keep asking about injuries. Because sometimes we get answers.
Well, and because it's literally our job. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like to me, you come out of the game today with a question that many people have, which is Drew Aller okay? Is your five-star quarterback, your starting quarterback, is he okay? That's the question. That's the main talking point. I would be absolutely negligent if I did not ask that.
Yes.
So I asked that, and again, he says he's not going to talk about it, that it wouldn't be fair to Drew and his family to talk about it, which again, like, I'm not asking for what.
Yeah, no one's asking for his like, blood asking... type.
Yeah. James, is he O negative or A positive? Fox? Yeah.
Never understand this.
Yeah. So anyway, we got a bit of an answer, but also I think to me, the telling part was what we observed during the game, right? So Drew Aller has an 8-yard run early in the third quarter, takes a hard hit right away. I mean, it was one of those hits that I gasped, like my end of the press box.
There was a noise made in the press box.
Yes. Like it was like one of those, ooh, like he got rocked. And honestly, at first when he got up and he kind of didn't look himself, I thought maybe it was a concussion because he looked kind of wobbly.
I thought this was interesting because Bo Prabula post game said that he saw that Drew looked dazed, and I thought so too. And then when the next snap, he takes a snap, it's an RPO. He doesn't hand the ball off, so he's throwing the screen on the to the boundary, and he throws it like kind of intentionally off target, or maybe not intentionally, but like just feels like he's just chucking it toward the sideline.
And the ball.
And it was one of those things where it was like, does he kind of like, is there something going on
wrong
where,
with him? Yeah.
Is there something wrong with him? Like mentally, like, is it a head injury, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is it a brain injury? Which is obviously like, we call them concussions. They're brain injuries. They're very serious.
Yeah. But terrifying.
Like,
yeah.
It's one of those things where I was like, oh, and then he kind of like wobbled a little bit heading to the sideline, and we didn't know what it was. And you know,
I guess he had a bloody nose. Apparently somebody said,
I did not know this.
I didn't see that from a distance, but somebody had said something, he had a bloody nose or something. I haven't had a chance to rewatch it yet, but I will be looking for blood when I go back. Oh, negative, A positive.
We'll make sure we get it tested too, so we can ask about it. But no. And then, it, you know, it seems pretty clear after he's on the sideline for a bit that it's a shoulder injury or something, or something, you know what I mean? His arm.
Yeah. I mean, he was going then, like this. He could not lift his arm, but
listeners, Audrey is raising her arm up. essentially Drew could not raise his arm above shoulder level. Mm-hmm. And even when they were singing the alma mater, I can't remember the players he was next to. He puts his left arm around a teammate and he like looked at the teammate to his right and like laughed, like, cause he's like, I can't do it. And then he like, I couldn't hear what he was saying, but he was showing them then how far he could raise his right arm up, which couldn't be, I'm not a doctor, I'm not going to guess what it could even be, but it looks like it's his shoulder, right? Essentially, for my uninformed.
I wondered, John, cause he was in the tent for several minutes. And then when he came out, I mean, probably 5 minutes, it felt like, cause again, I had the binoculars on. So I was sitting like this for about 5 minutes.
There was a game going on.
Yeah. So I will have to go back and watch that Bo Prabula drive.
I was going to say a funny anecdote, Oh, that's the thing. I didn't like everyone kept asking me about the explosive play. And I was like, it's Drew Aller, right? You're looking at the tent. And, like, I was like, he did what? Like, I didn't even see how they got down the field because right I was like trying to see that.
Crease and boom. I think the Aller, the imagery there, I think tells the story. We'll hear from James Franklin on Monday, but I mean, it's a short week. They got to go to Michigan State for a Friday night, Black Friday game at Ford Field. So again, you're losing a day. Absolutely, it's going to be asked about Monday. We will be at practice Tuesday this week because everything practice-wise for us is bumped up a day because of the Friday game. So that's what all eyes will be on. Now, John, Drew Aller exits. He's doing all that stuff with his throwing shoulder, his right shoulder, that right shoulder, right arm that, you know, his future is riding on. Bo Prabula comes in, rips off the 39-yard run.
Penn allegedly. State.
I was there. I saw it. Kind of. I was like this.
No, I saw it in the play-by-play.
It was so it's on the box score. It's true. But Penn State, 17 consecutive rushes with Mr. Prabula. Now, this was not, if people tuned out, I know I had some people on Twitter who said that at halftime they'd seen enough. They were going to go put up their Christmas lights. Again, when Prabula came in the game, I'm looking at it right now, Penn State was up 10-6. So this was not one of those, hey, you have a big lead, you're milking the clock type of games. You're in a 10-6 rock fight with Rutgers and 17 consecutive runs against a Rutgers rush defense that's really good. I mean, this is, I think, gosh, I should know because I wrote about this, maybe I think I want to say 13th nationally against the run coming into Saturday. I think
I believe Kyle Monongai was leading the Big Ten in rushing yards heading into
And he was Yeah, but this is a team that a Rutgers team offensively that didn't have much firepower, but you look at a Penn State offense that again, John, is this sustainable if, and again, we don't know this to be the case yet, but if Bo Prabula is your quarterback at Ford Field Friday night against Michigan State, can you win with a guy who we only saw attempt one pass and it was completed to Tyler Warren for 9 yards? Can you win with that?
Are they still playing Michigan State?
They are. Last I checked.
Then yes. they might be able to win with me at quarterback. But no, I think like they could not win with me at quarterback. That is absolutely.
I was gonna say, John, is destroyed. That a bet? What do we need to do to make this happen?
They would be playing 10-11 while I cry in the corner. But no, I do think like this is like they're gonna win this game, right? This Michigan State team is down bad. And I do think that this is, it's not a walkover by any means.
Listen, John, it's the Land Grand Trophy game. If you don't get excited for that game, you don't have a soul.
The last time for a while too. Mm-hmm. But no, I think like, I do think this is a winnable game no matter what, which is why I was going to mention this earlier, unless Drew is 100% with 0% re-injury risk or 0% than he would have any other week, like let's say 5 months down the road, I would not play him in this game. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think getting the kind of momentum they're looking to get is worth it. Let them get healthy, spend whatever it is, 6 weeks getting ready for a potential bowl game, right? Five and a half weeks and go from there. Yes, you want to make a New Year's Six game. You can do that with Bo Prabula at quarterback. I think Bo can pass a little bit. I don't think it's like, it is funny. Like every time this seems like happens.
Have we seen it?
This happened with Will Levis too though, yes. Right?
Yep.
they just ran him no matter what. It's like,
it was the Levis battering ram package. It was the Tommy Stevens lion package. It's the Bo Prabula package.
It's like you watched him in practice, right? And he can throw. Bo Prabula does not have that kind of arm. But I do think he can throw and I do think
he can arm.
Provide value. Yeah. Two actually. But he can provide value in the passing game that I think that it would make it. So it's not like it shouldn't anyways look like the Will Levis game when he started. Now, if it does, I think that's we're going to be having a long conversation in Detroit next
John.
Week.
Oh, boy.
I do think that they're in a good situation because of who they play. Because it is like kind of a short week where maybe Michigan State has a harder time preparing for Bo Prabula, right? Like, which could help them out. I think they're going to end up winning on Friday. So, yeah, I think they can win with Bo Prabula. And if there's any risk to Drew Aller, then I think they should try to win with Bo Prabula. And there's kind of no harm, no foul, as long as they, even if they win by two, like a win is a win, right? Like you go in, you try to grind the game out and win.
We're going to tell that to all the Penn State fans. Oh, hey, sorry, you went into Ford Field and you just won by two against a Michigan State team that's down bad. Don't be alarmed. Everything's fine.
Yeah, but without your starting quarterback and they win that game, they're probably going to a New Year's Six Bowl. And so like, that's the goal at this point, right? The playoffs not happening. Mm-hmm. New Year's Six Bowl is on the table and likely as long as they go undefeated. And so I think that's a priority, doing it however they can. And then using that game, whatever it is, whatever bowl game, maybe it ends up not being a New Year's Six game, to be the launching point for next season, because they desperately need something to be a launching point.
You know
they
what, John,
desperately need to find something that works.
I don't buy the launching point theory anymore. And I say this because I used to believe in it. I used to think there was value in it. That team that we saw in the Rose Bowl compared to the one we saw this year, night and day.
I think there's a lot of turnover there that makes that different, right? To me, the launching point is all about Drew.
Yeah, maybe it's about Drew. Maybe it's about these running backs. But I do think it's tough to evaluate and tough to use a springboard for a bowl game when we don't know who's going to opt out, right? Like, that's the other part of this.
We don't know who's going to be calling the offense next year.
There is that.
Like that's
we don't know who's going to enter the transfer portal. And it was
senior
day. I just
mean from a standpoint, to me, it's like the launching point is for Drew and Drew alone. And nothing else matters other than making sure he is like, you're giving him a chance to succeed, to end it on a high note, to give him some confidence going into spring ball before risking like that this is just like all downhill from here for everyone.
All downhill from here. That is that's a rough sequence. You know who was not downhill for today, John? I've got a positive. James Franklin said about positives and finding them. I found one. Amari Evans. We saw him today. We saw him early.
So I have a theory. So do we think, we can deduce who was upset at Amari Evans and who didn't like the Bo Prabula package?
I think his initials are M and Y.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know this for certain. I'm just like context clues, like based on the information that you, the listener,
also has. We saw Liam Clifford earlier today as well.
Yeah. Listen, Amari Evans was not playing much. Maybe it's just coincidental, right? But Amari Evans was not playing much when Mike Yurcich was the offensive coordinator. The first game after Mike Yurcich gets fired, you will have the snap counts far quicker than I will. Amari Evans felt like he set a season high in snaps for like actual, like meaningful snaps, right? Like not like just end of game.
Not special teams. Yeah.
Right. Or even like before the game's out of hand. And so, like, I don't know. Sometimes 1-1 just equals 2, you know, and that feels like that could be the case here.
Could be. Because, there were, I think the other thing we could take away from today is that the Bo Prabula package we saw in the first half. Would you rather result that we saw in the first half? So I think this was James Franklin saying, like, this is what we wanted to do. And, well, we just haven't done this often this year because, well, maybe the coordinator went rogue. Maybe it just didn't happen. Whatever. Maybe it had to do with the defense. Maybe I'm oversimplifying here. But it was there. Listen, we saw it.
Yeah.
It went for 4 yards. Otherwise,
I hated the way they did it today, though. And I stand by this. If you're going to call that, have both guys be involved. Otherwise, you're playing 10 on 11. And that's essentially what they did because Drew was split out wide and like had no involvement in the play. I just don't like doing that, right?
Use him in the red zone.
Like if you or like if you're gonna not have Drew involved in the play, just take him out. It's easier, right? Like I wouldn't do that. I would rather have both involved, just leave Drew Aller in the game because I think he's their best quarterback and their best chance at winning is with him passing or running, frankly, because he's also an excellent runner, as we're learning. Not the fastest guy on the planet, but mobile enough and a long strider that can get going a little bit. But I just don't like taking the ball out of his hands, and I don't like taking it out of his hands just to have him stand to the side and watch. It's like, listen, it's tough to criticize this offense because it's a lot of people involved in it today.
Is it, John? Isn't that what we've done all year?
Yeah, right. But the situation changed, right?
Today.
Like now you have people that are being forced into a difficult situation, and not that that's not the rule, right? You're asking either Jaylon Sider or Ty Howell to be involved in something to do something that they were supposed to be involved in, but didn't really seem like they had much of a say. Didn't seem like anyone had much of a say. But like you're asking them to take a massive step forward.
Let's stop right there because this has been on my mind for days. And you said no one else had a say in it. And I know I need to move forward with my thinking on this, but you know, we heard from James Franklin last week that the game plans weren't satisfactory, right? That the play calling, they got away from stuff. You just said that there's nobody that can change that. You know, there is one person who can change that.
Yeah, but listen,
in the flow of a game, it's hard. I get that. Absolutely.
Yes. I don't think you ever want to overrule your offensive coordinator because then you're essentially stripping them of confidence. Now we can have a discussion depending on when decisions were made, which we don't fully know when decisions were made, to be clear. I'm not saying that one way or another, but like it's difficult to take those duties away from the guy who's in charge of it, right? Like it's difficult because then you're either doing it yourself or you're putting someone else in that difficult position. And at that point, like if you're taking away Mike Yurcich's ability to call plays, you may as well fire him, right? And that like it happened. So I get it. I can't kind of get with that though, right? Like I can't get with the idea that James should be overruling or calling plays. And that's one thing, by the way, I think we've talked about on here, like everyone talks about James meddling in the offense. I don't think either of us thinks he was calling plays or anything.
That's an interesting
that.
Word. Yeah, I've never said that he was calling plays.
What we've said is what we've said this whole time is what James said on the record, that he was in offensive meetings, that he is making suggestions on the headset.
Involved on the offensive side of the ball because that is his background. That is not a hot take. That is not spewing BS. That is fact. And that makes sense.
And it's everything he has said on the record. He has said it. I can't stress that enough. But no, I do think I think everyone was kind of in a bad spot here. And so like asking James to be more forward with Yurcich, even like by doing more, I think it would have been unfair to Yurcich. It would have been unfair to James, right? To expect him to be able to do that like in the middle of a game. I do think.
Though, oh, I'm not saying in the middle of a game, John. Yeah, I'm saying whatever. If something went awry between Ohio State and Michigan week, that's where, again, and this is just where I'm thinking aloud here. But that's kind of where my head goes with it. But again, I'm moving forward with my thinking. We're moving on here. I am shifting topics. I'm going to find some more positives. Another positive today. Well, I would say positive, but then I think I might turn it into a negative into it. Katron Allen still looks good, running hard.
I know why you said about this could turn into a negative, because the numbers don't, like, the numbers will lie to you a little bit on this one. Nick Singleton did really well in garbage time. There was one play that stood out. I think it was in
the 20-yard run late.
Yeah, he had a 20-yard run late, but even
it's
that
like a hard hit after that.
Yeah, I also missed that because I was walking down onto the field, because I go down with 6.5 minutes left.
I thought maybe he had gotten concussed on that play because he went down hard. And like it looked like the back of his helmet almost hit off the ground, and he looked a little wobbly.
Some people were tweeting at me about that.
It was a scary scene. But then he was, because Trey Potts came in, and then Nick was back in the game. But yeah, no, continue your train of thought with this. Was you thought I was going to go negative with this, but I haven't yet.
Well, I just didn't think Nick was running the ball well until that kind of garbage time drive, right? Like,
I was ready to file my story, and I had that he had 7 carries for, I believe, 18 yards at that point. Right as I went to hit send.
I had this in my takeaways that Katron outplayed him. The numbers might tell you otherwise, but like in the meaningful parts of the game, Katron flat out outplayed him. And there's one play near the goal line. I think they settled for a field goal when it happened, where Singleton has a chance, like there is a wide open lane to his left. Like if he just cuts left, it's there. And instead he like runs straight into a linebacker or straight into his line, and where linebacker brings him down. And it's one of those things where it's like, that's been the issue all year, right? He's just not seeing it. For whatever reason, the holes in front of him, the field in front of him, he's just not seeing it as well as you would hope if you're a Penn State fan, as I'm sure James Franklin would hope. And like, to me, Katron is so clearly the better running back right now. There were so many times I started my rewatch. I'm basically through the first quarter of the offense. I watch the offense first on YouTube TV, and then I go back and watch the defense. But like where Katron is like finding space, right? He's mm-hmm. slithery and getting into these little gaps, and like, you know, like the B gap opens up and then he just kind of slides through it and gets an extra 2 yards out of that. They're just not getting that out of Nick Singleton right now. And I keep saying this, but like the disparity has to grow as far as I'm concerned. Like Katron has to be the guy right now. We'll take a brief break from the podcast to talk to you about the good people at Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Voodoo is our personal favorite to go get beer really any day of the week, specifically on those days when we got nothing going on. You just want to go sit maybe by the fire because they have the fire pits open with it getting colder out.
Get some food.
Yeah, enjoy the fresh air by the stream, enjoy some food. It's just an all-around great environment.
You know what else you need to do this week, John? What I need to do.
What's that, Audrey?
Go into Voodoo, get some beers to go.
Yes.
And get some beers to take to your Thanksgiving gatherings. I will be hitting the road this week, but for those who actually get to celebrate Thanksgiving with their loved ones, I'd recommend getting in there, getting some beers to go, because, you know, holiday season's upon us, John. It's stressful.
That's right. It's a great
settle up too. To the table. Going to have some unique conversations guaranteed around that Thanksgiving table. You don't want to be caught without something in your glass.
That's right. And some of us won't be able to do that because we'll be watching Audrey get very upset about the Packers in Ford Field, which I will probably enjoy more than she will.
That's probably why I need the beers to go with me. Yeah,
that's right. But no, Voodoo is a great place to be. Tuesday nights, they've got pub trivia. Thursday nights, they've got bingo, both at 6 p.m. Both a great time. Go down there, see Josh, Wes, the rest of the great staff at Voodoo. That's Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Back to the show.
The stats are a little skewed late, but it ended up Katron Allen's 16 carries for a nice 69 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nick Singleton, 11 carries for 61 yards, long of 20. Again, that came late in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I'm with you, John. That was what my takeaway said. Once Singleton then had the extra yards there, they're very locked in on this rotation. I think at some point you got to let it go, but I also feel like we're beyond that some point. I think that some point was Ohio State week.
That's the
we
thing.
Talked about it then. So is it going to change? Probably not.
What changes if they change it, right? Other than maybe they risk making one of those two guys unhappy. And like, so I get it from that standpoint. But like, it's, you're right. It might be too little too late at this point.
And that point you make about, you know, you're trying to keep everybody happy. Somebody had asked me about it this week. It was one of my mailbag questions in The Athletic. And they asked about that. And I never got to it because I ended up doing an OC-focused mailbag because Lord knows we have enough questions on the offensive coordinator these days and what happens with the search. But I do think there's some truth to that. And I'm not just saying at running back, but I'm saying across the board on this roster, right? Like, this is college football in 2023 with the portal. Like, you've got to have the pulse on your roster at all times, which I feel like James Franklin does a really good job with that, of knowing, like, hey, this guy's Matt, or maybe this guy's mom, or this guy's dad, or this guy's high school coach. Somebody's in my ear about
somebody involved in his circle.
Right? Yeah, somebody's involved. And again, like, this is all the stuff that falls on his plate that goes way out of the, you know, the it's part of the job description, even though if it's in the fine print somewhere. But yeah, I do think that absolutely happens. That happens here. That happens everywhere. No, we don't know who's going to be back on this roster next year, but certainly this is the time of year we're asking, right? I mean, senior day today, yes, every senior walks. Then they decide typically, or they go public with their decisions later, whether or not they're coming back. It was kind of interesting, John, down on the field, the final minutes. I was watching Olu Fashanu, and after every home game this year, especially, he's, I thought, done a really nice job of trying to soak in the moments, right? Like, earlier this season, I caught him, and this is when you realize how massive this guy's hands are, taking a selfie with a kid in the student section. And he's done stuff like that all throughout the year and going over to his parents along the railing and talking with them after the game. And he was out on the field for a long time. And I asked him about that afterward, kind of like, what was going through your head as you came off the field? And he's like, you know, well, if it's the last time, and then, I mean, come on, we all know this is probably going to be the last time for the guy, John, right? Like,
yeah,
this is the last
time. A lot of those guys.
But a lot of the guys, they don't want to say that, right? And that kind of falls into like the Penn State line of thinking of, it's about the team. We don't want to make it about us. But yeah, there were a lot of those moments, you know, at the end of the game. And to me, thinking back to the offense here for a second, like, Theo Johnson said afterward, he isn't, you know, decided one way or the other. I mean, I think logically we both, or I do at least, assume he's not coming back, but
yeah, this was something,
it, right?
He Tyler told me Warren immediately after
gets interesting, yeah, well, I think.
I was going to say, Theo mentioned right after the Rose Bowl last year to me that he was coming back. So I think when it'll be like a post bowl game decision.
Is that a Disneyland availability, John? I feel like
that was right after the Rose Bowl, like legitimately as soon as it ended, when we had like,
We kept asking him about it throughout the week.
Yeah. And I was the only one by him when he got out there. And so I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shoot or shoot, baby. I do think we're going to get some answers on these guys, and we'll talk about them as they come through.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but I think
there are
some obvious ones, right? Like
Chop Robinson.
I would be surprised if Chop is back. I'd be surprised if Olu's back, right? Like, it's just,
yeah, there's no way. There's no way, right? Like, it would be,
I would have said that last year about Olu too. I think his situation was
he said he wanted to get his degree and he's going to walk here in a few weeks. So that was certainly part of it. Come back 2 years in a row. Absolutely not.
That decision last year was made earlier than it was announced, like far earlier.
Absolutely. He met with his family in October after the Ohio State game. So that is, again, I think a lot of these guys, some of them are still working through it, but I do think there's probably a good portion of them that know what they're going to do, but they just want to wait to say it until closer to the bowl game.
Which is fine. Like,
totally fine.
It's their decision.
It's their life.
We tend to
whatever
know
they announce
which
it,
way
we're
to
write
go.
About it. And we're going to talk about it.
I will say it's interesting. There are some guys with interesting decisions, and we can get into that in the coming weeks. I don't think now's the time to do that, but I do think there are guys with more interesting decisions than I thought they would have 3 months ago, 2 months ago, what have you.
His name is Riley Thompson.
I just want to know how many more years is Riley Thompson allowed to play college football? Just somebody tell me.
I don't know.
Somebody tell me how many more years Riley Thompson can play college football. That's all I want to know. But
John, you said specialist that got me thinking. Another big day for Mr. Alex Falcons. He's turned into a really, really good story, I think, this year. Again, great. finding positives in the season. I think probably their most impactful transfer portal player from this cycle. Think about that for a second.
Oh no, that is true. Oh no.
Think about that, right? You're two specialists. I know I just kind of shot some daggers through your Dante Cephas hype train. And he's another one of those guys, I think, in the coming weeks we'll be talking about with his future, because there's another year there, right? If he wants it.
Will we be talking? I don't even know if there's a decision to make here, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't know. That one.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
I think it's pretty straightforward.
I think at this point, yeah. But, John, it's never as straightforward as it seems.
That's true. Because, and this is, I think people like lose sight of this too. Mm-hmm. This isn't always just about like, oh, you can improve your draft stock. Like, guys have different motivations. They have different needs, their family situations. They're like, all of those things go into account. And these guys make the best decision for them at the best time for them, right? Like, that is what's most important. And whether it's to stay or go, like they, like, I hate this idea that like, oh, look at player X. He would have gone in round X had he come back. It's like, well, you don't know what the situation is and why he needed to go earlier or if he needed to go.
And player X could have blown out his knee in the first game of the year had he come
back. Like, especially for certain positions, you don't get the second contract.
I never will fault someone for their decision because it is their decision. Agreed. It is their life. And I will say, John, because again, I'm full of positives on this Saturday night.
Sunshine and rainbows from Audrey.
Sunshine and rainbows coming over from me on this end of town. I enjoyed our post-game conversations. I think Theo Johnson is one of those guys who is super insightful, really interesting guy. He addressed the team afterward.
He might be my favorite player to talk to on the team, I think, at this point. Just very forthright, very honest, very transparent, and like,
are we gonna have to do a ranking, John, a power ranking of our favorite interviews?
I mean, we can, but God, like,
that'd be the nerdiest thing we do.
I think Theo he's not afraid to be emotional. He's not afraid to just kind of feel what he's feeling, which is always nice and helpful. I mean it happened last week. We talked about it when he was really emotional, and like, again, credit to everyone involved in that like, for handling it properly and handling it well. But Theo, like, that happens because Theo isn't afraid to show who he is, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
And he talked to us on, I think it was Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday he was on Zoom with us. Again, like, you talk about a team captain who has to answer for a lot of stuff that he probably doesn't want to answer to, right? Like, we're talking to him after they change offensive coordinators, and he took all of our questions on Tuesday. After the game again today, he came out, he talked to us, and he addressed the team afterward, and James Franklin had mentioned it. And Theo Johnson used that time afterward to thank James Franklin in front of the entire team. Theo said that he's like, you know, Coach Franklin does a lot for us. He kind of takes some of the heat for us. And he's like, I just felt that it was really appropriate. And I think, John, probably the timing right now after the past week, there's been a lot of questions, a lot of opinions. Certainly you and I have them, because that's our job to have them and to write.
Here's the thing.
This program.
We talked about this a little bit with Yurcich. I think and I'm guilty of this sometimes. Like, we lose the humanity of people involved in the situation. No, but I'm saying, like, we lose sight of, like, this is a person, right? Like, and it's easy to let it happen, right? Mm-hmm. Because especially when you're a fan, like, it's almost more natural for it to happen. But like, I think you could really tell. James talked about what Theo said and everything, and he talked about senior day.
He was getting choked up. I thought he was going to cry.
He was. I think he was tearing up by the end of it. Like, and he kind of got out of there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Before he did,
because,
like,
my question came before this, which that probably is what started the emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure. But no, I think it's one of the situations where you can kind of see the realness, right? Like, why a lot of these guys like him, because he's just talking about Mike Gesicki coming over to his house, right? And he's getting emotional. I think the phrase he uses is like something about, like,
he said something like, it's not fake. He already said, like,
yeah, it's like how that. Like, these guys mean a lot to me, or something like that. And that's when, like, his voice, like, he choked up a little. And, like, I think to his credit, like, James has a reputation for a lot of things. I don't think his relationships with his players, like, I think those are meaningful to him, right? Like, I think that's,
I mean, there's a reason why guys invite him to their wedding, right? Like,
right.
He has a really good relationship with Trace McSorley. He has a really good relationship with Nick Scott. There's so many of these guys, right? You see them, they come back, they're on the sidelines. Like, that's genuine. And the point that Theo Johnson made, he said, you know, he's like, I think we need to be appreciative of this guy, because he goes, he saved people's lives. You know, he's like, listen, he's like, some of my teammates, they could have been in rough situations had they not come here. But he gave them a chance. He believed in him, in them. And so I thought that was a really good kind of human look, right, at yeah. this week. And I will say, you mentioned Mike Gesicki. Did you catch his hoodie, John?
No, I did not. Did you see his hoodie? I did not see Mike today.
It had like a cartoon, I don't know, cartoon's not the right word. It had like an image of James Franklin on his hoodie. I tweeted photo of it out. Yeah. Yeah. So again, I mean, kind of a bit of a statement there. It's from Mike Gesicki. So yeah, I mean, I do think that is, because Mike was one of the honorary game captains today, along with Aaron Maben. Yeah, I do think that stuff is certainly genuine. I think it's certainly warranted. And I think Senior Day also brings out of a lot of emotions in people too.
But I think you're right about, like, I think what happened last week. Yeah, I don't like saying that. Stop catching me on that. I got to stop myself from telling you that you're right from now on.
Yeah.
But I think last week actually made this a little bit sweeter for everyone. Mm-hmm. As weird as that sounds, like, they're not happy they lost last week, to be clear. But like, the when you see the downside, and then you can kind of have this like reprieve, right, from all of the realness of people being mad at everyone for like, the, you know what I mean, how frustrated everyone is with where the program's at. Like, you get this reprieve of your players telling you they appreciate you and they care about you. You know, I'm sure that feels really good. And like, you even see, like, James has obviously grown a lot too, right? The way he handled last week's situation when one of his players was trying to defend him, right? He didn't engage. He just like kept going.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think like this, and this was honestly, this is what I wrote about following the game, because like there's not, like, you want to write about Drew and everything, but we just don't know enough yet, right, to form conclusions on where.
Oh, I wrote about Drew.
Listen, I am too in my good, bad, ugly column. Mm-hmm. It is the intro, but it's one of those things that's tough to flesh out fully mm-hmm. yet, right? And so I wrote about like the emotion and how like, yeah, 10-2 may not feel good to fans on the outside, but there's going to be a lot of guys in that locker room who remember 10-2 forever. You know what I mean? Like, they remember it like it's going to be a core memory.
Not everybody's going to go play in the NFL, right?
Yeah, like there's
that's
like
the other part of this.
We like the perspective of what this, what a game like Saturday's means, right? Like, it's, I said the one of the lines that I had in there was like, in the grand scheme of things, like, it does not mean anything to beat Rutgers on Senior Day, but to so many of those guys, mm-hmm. like, it means everything, right? But looming over all of this is that to a lot of people, 10-2 won't matter. So I do think like that's important to say that, like, yes, for all of the nice things we've said on this pod, like, I fully understand people being frustrated with 10-2 looking like the trajectory still, absolutely. And wanting more out of it and wanting better out of that. And they need to make some stark improvements to get there, right? Starting with this offensive coordinator hire that James absolutely has to nail. But I also think it's important to be human sometimes, right? And to remember that aspect of these things.
You know, John, it sounded like in your story and your analysis, your kind of synopsis of today you just gave us there, sounded like you found a positive in Saturday.
I did find a positive.
See, we're just going all Ted Lasso over here. Maybe that's what we need.
Listen,
a poster behind you, John. That's what you need.
Listen, I'm probably going to catch it from people for this, but I love Ted Lasso. Like, I love that show.
Oh, absolutely.
So I won't yeah. listen to any criticism of it. But unless
can we get to the defense, John? I want to talk a little bit about Chop Robinson and Denai Dennis Sutton. Because I think every week we gloss over the defense because the offense has given us a lot to talk about. So yeah, I kept it positive. There's a lot to talk about. Kobe King was somebody that James Franklin had singled out as having a good game. Johnny Dixon leads all cornerbacks in FBS with sacks, right? That's one of those. Again, that is not a stat I would have projected.
They do. They blitz him a ton, though, in the Prowler. Like, he's the guy coming off the edge. He's really good at it, too, to his credit. Mm-hmm. But no, I think maybe there will be a better time later, I think, to flesh out just how awesome this defense is. Something that I think we've said a lot on this pod to mm-hmm. some people's dismay, just how good it is. But this pass rush,
John,
is incredible.
See, now you're going to find Rutgers people who are they're hate watching us right now, and they're going to take offense to this.
Listen, the view counts the same whether they're enjoying it or they're not. But I do think like that like this, people should enjoy this defense because it's not going to, I think it's going to be really good again next year. It's not going to be this, right? You're not going to have, in all likelihood, Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson. Still have Denai Dennis Sutton, who in the end might be the best.
Man,
of the
group. he's special.
But you're probably, yeah. You're probably not going to have Kalen King. You're not going to have Johnny Dixon. enjoy this group because it's going to look
different. Don't know if y'all have Manny Diaz, TBD in coaching search season, right?
And Manny was on the field with his dad and some family members, like, taking photos after the game.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and it was, you know, this nice moment. But it was one of those things, like...
Did you weasel your way into any of the photos, John? Are you, like, lurking in the background?
I'm, like, in the background of every photo. I hate it so much. I just find my way into these things. My mother sent me a photo, I think this was like 3 years ago, of James's post-game interview, where when my hair was long, when it was like down to my shoulders, and you could see like my hair, like the way I had it like pulled over, it looked like my beard or my hair was wrapped around my beard, and like that it was one continuous thing. I'll show you this. I don't know if I had to have shown you this before. I'm not tweeting this one out. I apologize to the listeners. You
show me and I promise I will never screenshot and never tweet it.
Yeah, right. That's why the next time I see you in person, I will show you this photo when your phone is away and you can't take a photo of it. Fair. But yeah, I find my way in the backgrounds of these things. I hate it so much. But yeah, this defense is going to look very, very different next year. And I think people need to like appreciate what this is now, because, and now it does kind of suck for fans, right? Because it's a little bit of a waste of how good it really was.
Have an offense to pair with it. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't take away just how great it was. Great it is. You still got two left.
KJ Winston. Pick today.
He's a star. He is the next safety for them, mm-hmm. right? Like and we kind of knew this last year too. We talked, you and I did, obviously not on the podcast, but talked about like just how good KJ Winston could be. And I've been a KJ Winston guy since he came from DeMatha. But like he's excellent in coverage. He feels the game really well, right? And it's tough to like you know what I mean?
And explain that's so exactly much part what I mean. Of that position.
Yeah, right. It's feeling where the ball's going. It's feeling receivers around you. It's feeling where you need to be and when you need to be there and when to make decisions and when to react. And you can tell it's all instinctual with him, and he's kind of in the right place at the right time a lot. That was the exact case today. He read the quarterback. He saw that they were going to go right to the sticks, and he beat the wide receiver to the spot, right? And he cut off the spot even. And I thought, like, I think he's incredible. And by the way, when we talk about next year's defense, it has a chance to be a top 10 unit once again, you know, we talk about the guys anchoring it this year. Next year, we're going to be talking about Denai Dennis Sutton. We're going to be talking about KJ Winston. And we're going to be talking about those two guys as the key tenets of that group.
Yeah. And I will say after the Winston pick, I was looking over on my binoculars because I don't know. I felt like I did a lot of looking through the binoculars today at the sideline.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty nice, pretty cool scene. KJ Winston was over there with Terry Smith and Ola Adams, and Ola and Terry both had an arm around him, and like Terry was laughing and smiling. Like it was just one of those good moments, because Anthony Poindexter, of course, always upstairs during games for people who don't know that. But yeah, John, I'm looking, I got the stats in front of me. Leading tackler today was Kobe King with 10. This defense today, 7 tackles for loss. 3 sacks. Chop Robinson had 1. Johnny Dixon, of course, the other one. And then Koziah Izzard and Abdul Carter split the other one. I thought Abdul Carter, again, is kind of peaking at the end of the year here.
Been playing a lot better lately.
Yeah, I think, again.
Another guy, by the way. Next year, that's a name, obviously. Yeah. That was not on purpose. Like he is with those two as the 3 stars.
But to me, Chop Robinson, the forced fumble, the recovery there, it's like, holy God, that was, he just put Gavin Winston.
He's so good. He puts a lot of like offensive tackles in hell for mm-hmm. like 60 minutes. Like they're just going to have a bad time. And he beats guys off the edge so quickly. Like you have no chance. His first step is so unbelievably fast. Yeah. I mean, honestly, with a lot of these guys and a lot of this defense, it's like, what more do you say that we haven't said all year? All the stuff, if you go back and listen to every podcast, all the awesome stuff we said about them, still true. Still just as excellent now as the defense has been all year.
Well, John, there were a couple chunk plays early on, especially that, you know, you see them complete them and you say, ooh, is Rutgers going to have a chance?
Nah, but they happen.
Then 2 times Rutgers got down to the 7. Penalties both times on Rutgers backed them up. They couldn't do anything. Kirk Shiraka has an awful lot to look at with his offense. It is dumpster fire. Can I say it?
Yeah.
I just said it. Dumpster fire. I will say I wanted an end zone fade from Kirk Shiraka just for old time's sake.
Yeah.
Today, but we didn't get that. But you know what, John? I mean, you're right. This is a remarkably talented defense, but it's also one that we keep focusing on the other side of the ball, because if they just had a good offense. Not even, I'm not even saying an elite caliber.
It doesn't even, like, if they had an offense functional. That could be functional against good teams, like the offense mm-hmm. has been yeah, good right. against bad teams, right? Like it's been good. Mm-hmm. Like you can argue today that the offense was good. The passing game wasn't, but the offense yeah. was good because they ran the ball really
Ball. Yeah.
But I think like if they could have been functional against Ohio State, functional against Michigan, mm-hmm. like we're talking about a completely different outcome.
Yeah, they
look. Yeah, I think that's so that's
bad.
It.
The offense in those biggest moments, and that's back to the you know.
It makes it seem like this is a bad offense in general. When I don't think that's true, I think it's mostly just average to above average, and in those moments, it's bad.
Yeah, in the marquee moments where you need something to happen, it's not there. And of course, now all this week, the attention shifts to Drew Aller and his health moving forward. I mean, that's the storyline, John. That's what everybody wants to know. That's what I probably will have to ask about again, maybe on Monday. The question's coming. I can guarantee you the question's coming. It's probably going to come again on Tuesday as well.
I'm sure James knows. He has to know. It's your does quarterback.
I mean, the way he responded to me, I don't know. Does he?
I don't know. I think he did because he answered it.
Like, yeah, that's again, true. Like, yeah, eventually he did answer it.
But we will get mm-hmm. answers for that as the week moves on.
Is there anything else we forgot, John, from this?
I don't think
God, so. I feel like when we look back at some point, like, you know, late in the, as the winter drags on and the spring and the summer, when like football season is so far out of sight, this is one of those games that I'm not going to remember much when I think back on it. I mean, no, I will remember Bo Prabula coming in. I will remember the 39-yard yeah. rush that you completely missed. I'm sure Bo Prabula and his family will remember that moment. That's certainly a
yes.
huge moment, big day for them. But yeah, this is just kind of one of those games. It's because the numbers in front of me, I will bring this up. The attendance today, again, it always goes by tickets sold, not butts and seats, 105,114. I thought the rest of the stadium filled in very nicely.
Yeah, the student section did not, but like I thought the rest of the stadium filled in really
break
well.
Week. Yeah. Students.
You kind of knew it was going to happen once they lost last week.
Yeah, they were clearing out of here Thursday, Friday. Mm-hmm. And even honestly, years when they've had really good special teams, people have not stayed for the game. It's always a kind of a tougher ticket, especially with the students, to get people to stay.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Like a lot of people prioritize going home.
Well, there were a lot of people coming at me on Twitter pregame saying, you know, they need to take the tickets away from the students, that if they can't be there, like, dude, I'm not going to tell an 18 to 22 year old who's been here since August that they can't go home and see their friends and family. Like, sorry. Yes. Like,
come on.
Come on. Like you've seen this team, you know, you've seen this team in the marquee games. It's a tough ask for people to come here for Rutgers. But John, as you and I were leaving the press box tonight, they were shutting that thing down, man. The winterizing was starting.
Not to get all like, wow, time has passed, but like, wow, time has passed, right? Like it is wild that we won't be back in Beaver Stadium until the spring game. It is,
or until Monday for the presser, but
back in like the press box, yeah, the I press should box, say, yeah. Until the spring game, which is kind of crazy, right? Like this year is. I was talking with Josh Moyer about this. Like I think part of it is like they just had their inflection points so late in the year. Like we knew it'd be Ohio State and Michigan, and the second inflection point was the 10th game of the year, that it kind of made everything else feel not as consequential until we got there, and then we learned things. But yeah, this year has been it's been wild. This is my third full time season, fifth season overall, like on the beat. For you, it's season 45 on the beat, as everyone knows.
Yeah, 45 for sure.
But it has been like it's been crazy, and like it's been. I mean, we're gonna be doing this still, but the fact that this is the last home game already is kind of wild.
Yeah, and I think you know you definitely sensed the players soaking that up to the fans as they were exiting. Yeah. I think a lot of people were soaking that up as well.
Beat reporters always taking photos of the empty field, as we all do.
Yeah, I got a nice, actually, I forgot to tweet it, but I got a nice time lapse of the sun setting on Beaver State. Because now the sun sets at like 5:15.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you get that at halftime?
Yeah, that was got that one early. But John, we will be back early this week because of
we got to figure out
the road.
Yeah, we got to figure out when we're going to record. Everything's going to be moved up except for the Monday presser, because you can't move up a Monday presser any quicker.
Don't tempt them, John. Do not
listen.
Say that.
I won't go.
Do not
I will not go. I just won't go. period. Yeah. Actually, Eagles don't play.
Someone has already come for my Sundays before. I'm hoping we have a news-free Sunday around here.
Yeah.
Because the Packers play at 1 o'clock and, you know, listen, priorities.
Eagles play the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. I'm going to be very anxious on Monday night.
It's going to be a great game.
Going to be a terrifying game for me. But no, we'll be back at some point this week to preview Michigan State, to talk about where things stand potentially with the offensive coordinator, with Drew Aller's injury, with everything. I'll share my thoughts
on the Land-Grant Trophy.
I won't, because unlike everyone else, I don't have any of them. I don't care.
I have a lot of thoughts. I'll carry us, John. It's fine.
That's fine. You can handle that discussion. But we will be back with all of that stuff. You can find Audrey on Twitter, of course. In the meantime, at OddsNighter4, all of her work, of course, at theathletic.com. You can find me at John Sauber on Twitter. There is no H in John, and there never has been.
You sure about that?
I'm 100% sure, no matter how many times you put it in there. You can find all of my writing at centerdaily.com, centredaily.com. That'll do it for this episode of the Nittany Dispatch. We look forward to talking to you again this week. Until next time, have a nice day.